This episode is sponsored in part by Airbnb. You know, Jen and I love trotting around the globe. You gotta trot, you can't gallop or anything. And Airbnbs have become our go-to for a cozy stay wherever we land. So when we finally decided to put down roots and build our own place, we thought, why not sprinkle a bit of that Airbnb magic into our home? We went all out, designed it with a spare bedroom that comes with its own exterior door. This way, our guests can come and go as they please, making check-ins and check-outs a breeze. We've been lucky enough to host folks come into town to visit family and friends. Inspired by our travels, we wanted to make their stay extra special. So we began adding little personal touches here and there, snacks, bottled water, a brochure with our local recommendations that we made, even some cool samples from our show sponsors. It's all about making our guests feel welcomed and cherished. And really, when you think about it, why let your home just sit there gathering dust when it could be your ticket to more incredible adventures? Turning it into an Airbnb not only brings in a little extra cash, but it's also a fantastic way to share a piece of your world with others. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. This episode is sponsored in part by the Commercial Break Podcast. Have you ever wondered why somebody would date a ghost or why some people get married to cats? Have you ever thought to yourself, I should learn to speak a Martian language? Or why do television preachers have such expensive jets? Of course you don't. That's because you have better things to do with your time. But the good people over at the Commercial Break have plenty of time to waste, and they are answering these important questions and a whole lot more. The Commercial Break is a comedy podcast where two longtime best friends, Brian and Chrissy, get together every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to discuss life, love, and the pursuit of absurdity, like sinister ministers, ridiculous MLM companies, alien light language, TV dating shows, monster hunters, terrible psychics, and a whole lot more. The Commercial Break uses an unlikely friendship as a backdrop to discuss the insane topics they find online and reflect on their 20 wild years as best buds. The Commercial Break is available wherever you find your podcasts or visit tcbpodcast.com. Find all the video and audio of the show. You can also go to The Commercial Break on YouTube and find the video version of the podcast, and all of the episodes are available on the YouTube channel. Welcome to the show. I'm Jordan Harbinger. As always, I'm here with my producer, Jason DeFilippo. At first, when I heard of the Russia-based group Pussy Riot, I immediately thought that it was the worst name ever. Either something got seriously lost in the translation, or they're just going for shock value, devoid of any substance. Well, I could not have been more incorrect. Shortly after I heard about Pussy Riot, they gained even more international attention when they were sent to a Russian prison for 2 years for one of their protest actions after intensely criticizing Vladimir Putin's regime in their homeland. When I heard Nadia Tolokonikova was giving a talk in San Francisco, I pulled all the strings I could to get a rare interview beforehand. In this episode, we dig into the roots of Nadia's distrust of authority, why her protest art is important not only to her, but to the future of Russia, and we hear some pretty harrowing stuff about life in prison and lessons gained in one of the worst labor camps in Siberia. This is truly a rare opportunity to speak with an internationally known performance artist and musician, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. If you want to know how I book all these great people, those strings I knew to pull, and how I manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our Level 1 course, which is free, over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. And don't forget, we've got worksheets for today's episode so you can make sure you solidify your understanding of all the key takeaways here from Nadia Tolokonikova. That link is in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. All right, here's Nadia Tolokonikova. First of all, being 38 years old, I think I'm a decade or so older than you.
I'm 28 now.
Yeah. So what conditions were you in growing up that inspired you to grow into this sort of activism role? Because I think when I was 28, I was like, let me go to the bar, chase some women, go home,
28.
Watch a movie. Yeah, late bloomer maybe.
Oh, I don't know. I think Americans and Russians there are pretty different in this instance. Because Russians, they just have to grow up faster. First of all, like, legally, you can start drinking just at 21, and we can drink at 18, and effectively, we start to drink at 12. Second, I finished my school when I was 16 years old, and when I was 16, I left my home, I left my parents' home, and I moved just by myself to Moscow. And I know that here, you are supposed to study in school until 19.
Yeah, and most parents would be like, oh, you think you're moving out at 16? Maybe to the garage, you know? You're not going to Moscow.
And my mother wasn't thrilled of me moving too, but I just collected money from lunches, and I bought a ticket, and we're in good relationships now, but we didn't talk with her like for 6 or 7 years after that. She wasn't really happy. Yeah, in general, people start to grow up faster, I think. But it's changing. It's all changing. Like we can talk mostly just about our generations, but if you'll take a look at younger generations, like people who are 14, 15 years old, I think it's true for both Americans and Russians, that they're already, like, some of them, they're important part of the economy. Like, you know, that they're making this, they're making money on blogs, they're making money on slimes. Do you know what slime is?
Yeah, I do know what slime is. Yeah, this blew my freaking mind when I found out that people were buying this crap. I couldn't believe it.
Do you know that, like, 10 years old kids are making slimes and making, like, thousands of dollars?
Yeah.
Like, more than their parents.
Yeah. Like, you, like, we'll be lucky if this show and your book do as well as some 8-year-old kid who has a YouTube channel making slime.
No, I don't think we can really compete with them. Yesterday, I was happy as fuck, but not because my book came out, because a girl from Instagram, I don't know, like, I think she's 11 or something, she replied to me, and I wrote to her that I really want to buy this, like, 10 of these slimes, and they smell really good, like American slimes, and she's from Russia, and it's a big thing to have American quality slimes. So she replied me, and I understood that it's just like, now I will have some respect in the eyes of my daughter, who is 10 years old right now, too. So that's the only one way, actually, how to get some respect in her eyes. And that girl from Slime Instagram, she recognized me, and she started to like my videos of me performing at Charlie XCX's party the other day. And so that was just an ultimate happiness.
It's funny that, and I don't know what that communicates about our generation when we're trying to get our approval from, like, 10-year-olds who make things on the internet and they don't know who we are at all, or if we're happy when they go, I think I saw you on the news. Yeah, my mom was watching and I looked over her shoulder. Yeah.
For me, it's connected with my daughter.
Of course.
I just want to be cool parent, you know, as a whole. We all do.
Yeah, you can be an internationally recognized artist, and it's like, yeah, but do you make slime? Didn't think so, bitch. Get out of here.
Exactly.
Yeah. that could bring you down to the level on the regular, right? As soon as you get a full yourself, just ask your kid what she thinks of your career.
Exactly. I was like, yeah, Gera, my book came out. Did you see that interview? Like, that interview with, like, one Russian YouTube blogger. Actually, pretty good interview. Like, it's over, like, 1.5 million views just in 7 hours.
Oh, wow.
And, I haven't seen this interview because I can't hear or see myself on, like, taped. But all my friends are freaking out. They're saying it's such a great interview. So I asked my daughter if she's seen this interview. So she sounded really bored, and she asked me about slimes again. So when you will come back home again, and will you bring this parcel right away?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how quickly are you going to bring that American slime back? That's what I really want to know.
Yes.
So you're 6 years old. You're walking around with your dad, and you cross the street when you see cops on the other side of the, or on your side of the road. Obviously, there's some kind of rational or irrational fear that something's going to happen. It seems like that might have been maybe the genesis of your, I don't want to say rebellious streak, because it's not really a streak. It's kind of who you are at the core. What was going on there? Why was your dad, even when you were a kid, avoiding the authorities?
There is a strange tradition among Moscow cops that they're stopping people on the street of Moscow, and they're saying that you cannot be in Moscow without, like, special registration, which is a total bullshit. And but they're doing it for over 2 dozens of years, because they expect that they will find a person who doesn't know about this. And, like, most of the people, they don't know that cops are going against the law when they're asking for this mythological registration. And mostly they're stopping people who are looking poorer, people who are coming from, you know, the poorer countries, like ex-USSR republics. You know, say, our version of your Mexican immigrants.
Sure. So somebody from, like, Georgia or Kazakhstan or something
from
like
that? From Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, yeah, Tajikistan, not even from Georgia, because Georgia is just too rich and Georgia, it's a Western country after the revolution. It's not a satellite of Russia anymore. And just, you know, just people who look like they might be from other city rather than Moscow. And my dad hated to deal with cops. He knew that they it's not legal what they're trying to ask him. But, you know, they can bring you all sorts of troubles. They can bring you to police departments. And since Russian cops are super corrupted, if you start to argue with them and you'll make them mad, they can put it. Weed in your pocket and you'll go to prison for 10 years just because of that. So nobody want to fuck with Russian cops. And so it's pretty rational thing.
Yeah. So it's not an irrational fear. It's a rational fear that they're going to make turn your day to shit. So it's like, let's just cross the street.
Yeah. Or your next 10 years to shit.
Yeah.
So my father always, or, you know, cross the street, or we would never go, like, how do you go, hold hand when we walk, we don't do it because I don't know, we're not physical creatures in that sense with my dad. I don't know, we just did never hug, we never hold hands and stuff like that. So he would hold my hand when he see cop, because he, at some point, he started to fear that this cop will think that he stole a kid. And so this holding a hand should be a sign of me being okay with me walking with this man, my dad. And I don't think that this fear is irrational, because the cops in Russia is super corrupted. And the reason why people want to work in Russian police now, because they're expecting to get a salary, because salary is super low.
Right.
They want to get bribes.
Right, that makes sense. So these are the seeds of your early distrust of authority, it sounds like.
Sure.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's not just about me, it's about all citizens of Russia. We hate government. We all hate government. We love our country, but we hate government. I was talking yesterday with one American person. He told me that in his mind, there is no such big distinction in people's minds between state and country. Between government and country, but in Russia, it's just completely two different things. One of it, them we love, and another one we hate.
That's interesting. Yeah, and in the States, I think we do sort of put the government and the state in one basket, and you see people who are not supportive of the government, and people say, "How can you not be patriotic?"
Yeah.
But of course, the counter argument is, "I am patriotic. I'm showing you how much I hate this current government or whatever," and that's kind of what you do in a lot of ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of course, people accuse you of being anti-Russian, but you're more just anti-Putin. Is that fair?
It's not like more. I am anti-Putin,
right.
And I'm pro-Russian. And in America, recently, I was accused of being Russian spy because I refused to. I mean, I would never want and think of being an anti-Russian.
Wait, who accused you of being a Russian spy?
Let me give you an example. When I'm trying to be real. And not living in a universe of black and white things. For example, like when I'm saying that I think that Putin did interfere in American elections, but he's not that effective as you think he is, and that I don't think that Putin is the main reason why Trump was elected, and there might be some internal issues like poverty and inequality, like problems with healthcare and education system that might brought Trump to power just because people wanted to rage. You know, some people in America, they accuse me of being a Russian spy because...
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't see the connection there.
Or say, like, when I'm saying, like, the Russian prison system sucks, but American prison system sucks, too. And they're like, yeah, you sound like Putin, because all the time he's saying, yeah, but Guantanamo.
Mm. Yeah, I suppose there's a difference between... That's not really how spies are. These people know, they don't know any real spies. That much is clear. Yeah. But it's kind of funny, the comparison with Trump, because I think a lot of people who voted for Trump that I know... He's kind of their Pussy Riot. They're like, you know what? I don't like Hillary Clinton. I don't like the establishment. I'm going to vote for this guy. I think he's probably just a weirdo reality star, but I'm going to vote for him. So in a weird way, he's like the Pussy Riot of the United States, where it's like, look, I'm just going to vote for the wild card, the guy who's going to kick everyone in the nuts. Yeah. It's going to be that guy.
I know. I had a hard time when I was writing this book about how I was writing that everybody has to take part in politics. And I think that it's good if not professionals will. I want to see more unprofessional people in politics because, you know, the experts brought us to neoliberalism, which I don't really like. And then writing these lines, I realized that actually Trump is not professional, but I'm not that happy to see him in power. But I think it's still true that it's good to have more unprofessional voices in politics, but I guess just Trump has to be counter, right? What is the English word for saying that?
He has to be countered.
He has to be
countered. Countered. Like counteracted.
But by somebody else from our side. So let's say more progressive unprofessionals in politics.
Nice. Well, there's nothing. Lots of us are unprofessional progressives. I'll put it that way. A lot of people hear the name Pussy Riot and they think, all right, what is this? You're just trying to get shock value. Can you tell us the beginning a little bit of what Pussy Riot is? Because when I was reading in the book and you said you just made it up for a lecture, I was like, there's got to be more to it than that.
No, seriously.
Not really.
No, seriously. We made it up for a lecture. We promised to make a lecture on punk feminism, Russian punk feminism, in 2011. And then we realized, like 5 hours before the lecture, that there is no punk feminist tracks on Russian, and we created the first track in 1 hour, and none of us knew how to sing, how to make music, how to write lyrics for songs, and we knew nothing about songwriting. But
don't worry, I think most of the people on the radio have no idea about songwriting either.
But we decided to make a band as a conceptual art gesture, and we were thinking how to call it. And we were inspired by Riot Girl movement for a while. And
Riot Girl movement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Riot Girl.
Yeah. I had to look that up when I read it the first time, but it's kind of like what it sounds like.
What do you mean? You didn't know?
No.
You didn't know Riot Girl?
No. Riot Girl, no. I hadn't heard of it before.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, look, I'm a former attorney. I'm not exactly in the wheelhouse of like cool punk kids.
No, I thought it's just it's written in American Constitution. This words I thought it's just, you know, it's like knowing Britney Spears.
Britney Spears? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. maybe I'm the one who's lost on it. I don't know. The listeners will tell me on Twitter where I've been under a rock if they've all heard of it. We used to just do like the rehearsing of the music in these abandoned buildings, and like you're talking about being out in the rain on some playground and singing into a tape recorder with like the battery acid from your speaker dripping down your back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like legit punk / fully irresponsible type of scene that you started.
Why irresponsible?
Yeah, the fact that you let your back get burned by battery acid, that was just like, okay, we get it. You're legit. You don't have to hurt yourself.
Oh, we didn't want to hurt ourselves. It just happened because you have to be effective. And when you're trying to go against people like Putin, you have to be twice effective. So it's not about fun. It's not about anything like that. It's about being tough, rough, and effective. So it doesn't matter if you will end up being I don't know how to say it. I've got all English words.
That's okay. So you're kind of saying it, as far as I can understand, it doesn't matter if you get a couple scrapes on your knees and elbows while you're doing it. The point is to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You don't have to look. You don't have to. It doesn't have to be smooth.
It doesn't have to be smooth. I was living in this mindset since 2007 when I started to make actions. And we'd done lots of crazy actions. And we lived for 8 years just only by shoplifting. We didn't have any money. So
you shoplifted for 8 years to survive?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a long time. You must have gotten caught several times, unless you...
Obviously, yeah. but you have a little bit of money. So say you have, I don't know, like $50, and you have it for a month. And you think, oh, maybe in a month you can be caught once, or maybe not. But yeah, you give this $50 as a bribe, and then you go to the next shop because you have to eat.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So the getting the money was the insurance policy against getting caught, and shoplifting was the survival mechanism.
Yeah, but in order to survive, you need just $50 a month, which is a good deal.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Wow. Not, I don't know what part of Moscow that is, but it seems more expensive now, that's for sure.
It's not just Moscow. We were traveling all around it by hitchhiking, and actually we lead pretty interesting lives. So it showed me that you can live amazing life without money. It's not like it's an ideal scenario, but if I at that point I had to decide between art and working on some boring job for some boring idiot boss, and definitely I choose to make art and live by shoplifting.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Nadia Tolokonikova. We'll be right back after this. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. To learn more about our sponsors and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. And if you'd be so kind, please drop us a nice rating and review in iTunes or your podcast player of choice. It really helps us out and helps build the show family. If you want some tips on how to do that, head on over to jordanharbinger.com/subscribe. Now back to our show with Nadia Tolokonikova.
You're probably one of the most famous Russian cultural exports, aside from Tetris, which, of course, is
what
the number
tattoo?
One of all time. Tattoo?
Yeah.
I forgot about tattoo.
Yeah.
I forgot about tattoo. Oh, my God. We'll have to link to that in the show notes because no one knows what we're talking about right now. Yeah. Oh, my God. That was my, from college, I used to, I had Russian college roommates, so that was blasting at all of our house parties. I had to learn it.
Yeah.
What are some of the acts that you did? A lot of people know that you make music, but they don't know about, say, the skull and crossbones projected onto the White House. Tell us about some of the things that you're more, that you think are more maybe some of your impressive pat yourself on the back type of acts that you're surprised you pulled off.
Yeah, skull and bones are my favorite. It was on my birthday, 7th of November. It's the day of Russian Revolution, 1917. So it was my birthday of 2008, and we gathered a bunch of people, a bunch of activists who were a storming team. And
A storming team,
yeah. And another group of protesters who somehow got big laser projector, and we projected across the river, the Moscow River, from Ukraine hotel. We somehow made it to the roof of this Ukraine hotel, just broke the door and brought this laser to the roof of Ukraine hotel, and then projected skull and bones under parliament building of Russia. It's called, it's our White House. And it was 4 a.m. in the morning, and it's beautiful. It's like 60 meters wide and tall, skull and bones. And it was a signal for a storming team, and they had to climb onto the fence, like 6 meter fence. Because the Russian government is really afraid of people, so that's why they decided to protect themselves from the people with this 6 meter fence. And so our idea was to show the people that actually they tried to protect themselves, but it's not really effective because, you know, just a bunch of idiots, punks, anarchists can break through it. It means that a big, like, massive crowd can do it easily. And we climbed over the fence and just ran in the territory. And in 15 minutes, we were gone. And just after this 15 minutes, cops were awake. Not even cops, like, you know, this special security forces of parliament. And they started to run around with this lights and trying to find us, what's going on, and they weren't able to find us.
Well, they know who it is now.
They know, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess it's too little too late. You made your point at that juncture.
It's funny that Putin is, like, you're asking me now to tell about these actions, but and saying that nobody knows about it, but Putin knows them really well. Because once he met Angela Merkel in 2012, when we were in prison already, and the first question that she asked was like, what's up with Pusseret? And he started to give her a lecture on our art, but it was a little bit, he was basing on real facts, but he would completely change their ideology. So let's say, like, we made one anti-fascist action, and he described the action, and he said that we made it under fascist slogan, and he wanted to scare Angela Merkel with it. Yeah, but he told her about like five of our earliest actions, which was crazy.
Yeah, it must be. How does it feel to have these world leaders who are in these private chambers with their tea and their bodyguards, and you're sitting in a Russian prison, and they're like, so these 25-year-old women, or however old you were at the time.
I was 22.
Yeah, these 22-year-old women, they're screwing my world up, man. Got to do something about this. Look at how bad they are.
I was really happy that Putin is in troubles because of us, because they definitely didn't expect anything like that. After us, they put one person who is actionist, who is artist. Do you have this word actionist in English? Actionist?
Activist, maybe?
No, actionist.
Actionist, what
actionist
does that mean?
Actionist is it's a word which describes a person,
like a
who
noun?
Is making action. So Petr Pavlensky, he was inspired by us. He's an actionist from Russia, and he burned the door of FSB building.
He burned it.
He burned.
That's like walking
door.
Up to CIA headquarters,
yes.
Or FBI headquarters, and just like lighting it on fire and being like, yo,
exactly.
Here's my middle finger.
And then he made a photo of himself standing with this oil canister.
Yeah.
And just being tough as fuck and with this burning doors behind him. So they put him in jail, indeed.
Obviously.
But they had to, I was really scared for him.
Sure.
I thought he will end up in jail for like for terrorism for like,
sure.
20 years. But they let him go after 6 months. And a lot of people told us, actually, that we were the reason why they let him go so easily, because they don't want to fuck with artists and activists, actionists anymore.
Yeah, there's immediately a spotlight goes on that government when they do, in part because of you. But this stuff is still risky. I mean, I saw the video at Sochi Olympics where they were like whipping you guys with, is it like a leather whip? I mean,
mm-hmm.
and they're hitting you with sticks and stuff. I mean,
yeah.
This is like gnarly. These guys aren't like, all right, kids, time to go. They're like, they walk up right away and start hitting you. They don't warn you, nothing. I mean, they're coming after you. What are your parents? Are they not worried? This is more dangerous than ever right now.
Mm-hmm. Of course they do. My mother thinks that I need to immigrate, run immediately.
Yeah, you still live in Russia. I can't even believe
it. She's convincing me that I have to leave since 2014. That's since the time when I got out of jail. And Yeah.
I mean, one of your bandmates, your former partner, he was just poisoned with something.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a super healthy guy. He was in intensive care for a couple weeks. This is weeks ago. And he recovered, thankfully, because he's the healthiest guy in Russia. But, you know, this kind of thing would freak me out. You even see Russian activists dying, maybe they're actionists, I don't know, dying in the UK. You see people getting poisoned across the world. Alexander Litvinenko getting teacup poisoning. Does that not make you stay awake at night just a little?
No, I sleep really well.
Okay. Why?
It's just I'm healthy. I have healthy sleep. No, if you're asking me if I'm afraid.
I'm asking if you're afraid.
I am. Like, we have different approaches to answering this question because we have different theories on that. Within Pusseret, so like let's say Masha's Alekhina theory is that she's telling that she's not afraid at all. She doesn't have any fears, and
Masha,
I think
your bandmate not afraid at all.
No,
okay.
No. And like knowing Masha, I'm 100% sure that it's true. Because she just, I think it's some variation in her DNA. So she doesn't know like what is fear. She read about it in encyclopedia, but I know she doesn't know exactly how to feel. Like she tried, but she couldn't. Actually, she does. Actually, she kind of tried Facebook posts. She told me, like, the only one fear that she has that she cannot post on social things. Like, she's writing, she cannot write about her action. She asks somebody else to write about her action. That's only one fear that she has.
So she's afraid of posting on Facebook, but she's not afraid of Vladimir Putin.
Yes, she's not.
Or the FSB.
She's not afraid of being poisoned, killed, imprisoned. She's not. Just Facebook posts makes her really scared. And I have another theory about fear. I admit that I do have a lot of fears, but I have my way to channeling these fears, working with these fears, and I think you will not achieve a lot in our country if you will let fear get over you, because you know, you don't want fear to own you. So like, we're in dialogue with my fears all the time, but they definitely exist.
That's good. At least you're human in that respect, right?
I was like, I was trying to be like, at some point I was scared, really. I was staying out of Russia for like almost a year. I was coming back, but I was traveling so much that I felt like it's more comfortable for me to be out of Russia. Mm-hmm. But it was a really tough period for me, because I understood it actually is pretty hard for me to be out of Russia most of the time, because it's language, it's culture, it's people. They are really brave. They're like, our community is just insane. Like the Mediazona, this website that was started after we were released from jail, and the journalist who works there, reporting on really dangerous issues, reporting on abuses of human rights in the most dangerous regions of Russia, like Chechnya. They're risking their lives on a daily basis, but and they're just laughing about it. Like, it's shameful to fear. And if you're surrounded by people like who are really brave, you're becoming more brave by yourself. So I feel good in Russia.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see you obviously have a network that supports this kind of work.
Yes.
And, you know, there's 10 voices telling you can do it, and only your mom and a few other people are saying, why don't you move?
Mm.
So I can see how you can compartmentalize that.
You're listening to The Jordan Harbinger Show with our guest, Nadia Tolokonikova. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for listening and supporting the show. Your support of our advertisers is what keeps us on the air. To learn more and get links to all the great discounts you just heard, visit jordanharbinger.com/deals. Now for the conclusion of our interview with Nadia Tolokonikova.
One thing that would have scared the crap out of me, though, and still does, even when I read it, is you went to prison in Russia for a couple of years. Give us a picture of how you got caught and ended up going to a Russian prison.
We weren't caught right away, because people in the church, they didn't really care about us. So we made our prayer. They caught us. I mean, yeah, the guards caught us, but they let us go. They just told us, like, get out of here.
So you're in the church doing this disruptive, what would you call it? Like
Performance,
yeah. Like this disruptive performance of mock prayer with your brightly colored ski masks on.
It's not a mock prayer. It's a real prayer. It's
real
just punk prayer.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So the guards kick you out.
We didn't want to mock Christianity. You know, we wanted to empower it, because we think that the world changed. Like, and with the world, Christianity should change too, in order to be, you know, still interesting for people. Because, yeah, you know, including new generation, like my daughter, she doesn't want to go to church like it looks right now. It's just not cool. Mm-hmm. And we want to make Christianity cool again, like it was in the times of Christ.
Yeah, probably. It was basically Pussy Riot circa year zero, right? This rebel, long hair, great abs, goes and tells people everything they know is wrong.
He's a punk rocker.
I'm going to get so much hate mail for this. I just already know. So just stop writing your email right now. I already know what you're going to say. Just leave me alone.
So
you didn't get caught right away.
We didn't. No, because it wasn't their job to caught us, to get us to police. They thought we were just a bunch of freaks and idiots, and they forgot about us in half an hour. But then we released a music video, and this music video somehow was picked by a big Russian television channel. And I think probably through this television channel, somebody from administration of president or Putin himself or Patriarch of Russian Orthodox Church, they noticed it and they decided that we you know, this is a patriarchal thing. They cannot let the girls just come to their place, to their home, to their property, and just tell them that they're fools, that they're corrupted, they're not honest with their people. And yeah, they decided to punish us. They opened a criminal case, and in 2 weeks after the performance, we were arrested. But it was really tough for them to catch us, because at the time we were activists for 6 years already. We knew how to hide from the cops, and for a week, just dozens of cops were looking for us. And when they caught us finally, they were so happy, because clearly all this week they were, like, their lives were really hard, because they cannot. They just find a bunch of stupid, crazy, punk, anarchist, idiotic girls.
You're making them look like fools. But then you ended up...
It's our profession.
It is your profession, literally. And you ended up as a political prisoner inside Russia. And the stories from the book are horrifying. I mean, they burned your eyes with some sort of acid liquid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what the hell is that all about? That you're not blind, thankfully.
No.
But that hurt, obviously. That was the point. And scary.
It hurt, yeah. It's intimidation, first of all, because it was really tough for me. That was after a couple of times they doing it with me. I started my panic about Russia, and it was the time when I decided I'll stay away from Russia for almost a year. Yeah, it was really scary. Because I wasn't a person who got into fights when I was a kid, so like physical space and physical safety zone was really important for me all the time. I think it's really different for someone who was just fighting all their childhood. So it's not that traumatizing. But I'm the only one kid in the family. So like for me, my safety zone is sacred.
Yeah.
So I was really just physically scared.
Well, they put you in a cell with somebody that murdered two of your friends as well. I mean, they're like messing with you psychologically as well as trying to hurt you in prison. Mm-hmm. So they got you so in police uniforms and all this. What gives you the strength to go forward when you're worried about, are they going to try to blind me? Are they going to try to beat me up? I mean, they were highly abusive to you while you were behind bars.
I just prefer not to think about it. Maybe some people will say that it's not that smart, but again, it's just like a psychological mechanism of me. No, I made a decision that I want to make art in Russia. And if I will think about all that stuff that you just mentioned, I would not be able. So it's either or.
Yeah, it would scare you away. So you're not going to let that happen. So you're just going to say, forget it.
Exactly. I don't think about it. But it exists. So I don't know. It's not an easy thing, but life is not an easy thing. And in the end, you will die. So I just somehow deal with it. I understood that I'm dying. I'm dying outside of Russia, because I'm a political artist whose inspiration is in my politics and my community. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to make, I want Russia to occupy the world. But with art.
With art. Okay.
With art,
I can live with that part. I was a little scared for a second. Yes, with art and the end.
Like it was in the beginning of 20th century, it was so beautiful. Like our art was in their avant-garde of the world art. And it's still possible. I mean, it's still reality, because Russian rap is just, it's the best. Right? Russian music, Russian rap is, it's the coolest. How can you live without Russian rap and listen to just, just American, which I like American rap. But I'm saying that there is great potential in my country and in my culture that has to be developed. And I think if all ambitious young people will think like, oh, I will leave Russia and I will make my life and career somewhere else, then we'll never have the future. So I really support those people who decide to stay in Russia. No, and it's really hard to make a career, because especially if you're anti-Putin, anti-Kremlin person, but there are more and more young people, 20, 22, 23, who are saying, like, we are patriots and we will make anti-Putin art and we don't care that, you know, we will not be as successful as we would move to, you know, London and just study some design and fashion right. bullshit.
Sure, sure. Well, who's your favorite American rapper? I got to know.
I'll not tell you.
No,
I'll not tell you.
Because you're embarrassed or because?
No, it's too personal.
Your favorite rapper is too personal?
Yes. And oh, this question is too personal. No, my favorite rapper is not personal to me, but, you know, the idea that everybody will know what I'm listening to is just shocking.
You mean you're embarrassed?
Yes, I think so, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Okay.
So you'll show up in the middle of a music video in a bra and panties, but tell Jordan your favorite rapper? Not going to happen.
Yes, I'm like Masha in this sense.
I feel like I just can't. This is a fight I'm probably not going to win, so I probably shouldn't ask again. But now I'm even more curious. My God, is there anybody that you like that maybe isn't your favorite, but maybe like top five? Can you give me a hint?
No,
damn.
I'm not answering this question.
No problem. Hey, look, I gotta respect your boundaries. You said you learned a lot in prison. In fact, you learned a lot more in prison than you would have in the 2 years than if you were free. What are some of the lessons that you took from being in one of the crappiest places that humanity's ever devised?
I was thinking a lot about Viktor Frankl, and surely you cannot compare my experience with his experience, because he was literally in death camp in Germany, and it's quite different. But I think there are mechanisms, like the psychological mechanism that he noticed, and something that I noticed, there are similar to some extent, that you understand that if you have meaning in your life and you have this feeling of sense, and if you find something to live for, like helping people around you, like thinking about art in the future that you will create, trying to write something, trying to think instead of being turned into a lifeless body, like into a shade of a person who you were before and on freedom. It teaches you how to really meaningful goals for yourself that literally can save your life. But the problem with all of that is that Dostoevsky pointed it out in Idiot. You promise yourself that if you will be saved and they will not kill you, because he was thinking about it when he was on the way to death sentence. He said to himself that I will cherish every moment of life after. But he pointed it out brilliantly that you forget about it. Just in the months you live like a normal idiot.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remind myself that it's really to go back sometimes to those conclusions that I made when I was in prison. And partly that's why I wrote this book. And in that sense, it's my own psychological work. And for some reason, I decided to publish my just my diary, my psychotherapy diaries.
Sure. But don't tell anyone who you listen to in the car. But publish all of your prison journals as a book and sell as many copies as possible. Yeah. Yeah, the future, you wrote, the future has never seemed so full of and rich and wonderful possibilities as when I was in a labor camp and literally had nothing but dreams. And I think that that's so amazing to be thinking about that while you're getting beaten up by guards, getting fed rotten potatoes, watching people get killed around you who are dying of slave labor, essentially, or the cold. And you learned a ton about yourself in prison. You don't have to be helpless in prison. And little things that you write about, seeing green leaves for 30 minutes a day or the whole summer. Sorry, not 30 minutes a day. 30 minutes for the whole summer.
Yeah.
Or catching 10 minutes of sunlight once a week and finding joy in that. That, you wrote, was the ultimate act of subversion in finding joy in a refusal to pay and obey in an act of living by radically different values. So you still kind of have this punk rebel vibe in prison, and that's what you credit your, that's how you credit your survival. That and knowing you had an army outside supporting you. So after you got out of prison, you visited a bunch of other prisons around the world. And I thought that was kind of an interesting choice, because if I got out of prison, I don't know how quickly I'd be determined to get into a bunch more of them, even as a tourist.
No, honestly, it's a really great feeling when you're coming to prison as a tourist and you know that you will
be able to
get back to freedom. It wasn't the main reason. The main reason was us really going deeply into prison reform issue. And we started an NGO that's called Zona Prava, or Zone of Justice. And our goal was to find a way how to make Russian prison system better. And in order to do that, we didn't want to invent a bicycle, and we wanted to take a look how prison system is structured in different countries. And when we came to New York, we met Bill de Blasio, who just became a mayor of New York at that time. And he made really nice reception for us, and he was really kind and sweet and nice. And then he asked, what can I do for you? How can I help you? And we asked him if we can go to prison. And then the next day, he arranged a tour for us to Rikers Island.
That's fast. Well, if there's one thing we do in the States really well, it's send people quickly to prison.
Exactly. but it was, I don't think it was a real tour. Like, obviously, when you go with officials to prison, then you don't see a real side of prison. But it was interesting for us anyway. And then after a couple of months, we ended up in Rikers Island for the second time without Bill de Blasio at this moment. And it happened because we realized that Cecily McMillan, who's Occupy Wall Street protester, she ended up in prison because protesting, basically, because a policeman, while arresting her, grabbed her by the breast, and she just automatically elbowed him, and she ended up in prison, not him, though he assaulted her. And she was facing 7 years in jail, exactly the same amount of years as we were facing. So we just understood that it's really her story mirroring our story. And we talked about her in Washington, in the Senate, in front of all the senators, poor senators and journalists. And then we jumped on a plane, went to New York. And that was the time when we've seen real Rikers Island with the queue of relatives standing, like, really long line, and I believe we were the only one white people in that line. And I remember asking my friend, like, why don't they put white people in jail in America? And so it was the beginning of my big question and big investigation, why does it happen. So that's America. But we had better experiences in prisons in our countries, in other countries. In Norway, for example, we ended up in Bastøy, which is a prison island. It contains of a number of cottage houses, and 8 people live in each house with their own room. And their prison warden showed us a special cottage where prisoners can make music, like bass guitars, electronic guitars, equipment for recording a song, and the number of CDs that prisoners recorded while they're in prison. And the same picture in Netherlands, and basically, yeah, with Scandinavian countries are known for their attitude towards prisoners, and it works.
For their warm attitude towards prisoners?
Yes.
So if you go to prison in Norway, you end up with a beachfront dacha or cottage and a rec room. The only downside is you got to live with 8 other or 7 other people that you might not know or get along with. Not bad.
They have normal prisons too.
I'm sure. I hope so.
Like, not normal, but they don't have cells. They look like normal house. They're not islands, but it's like a normal house with rooms, and every prisoner has his own room. Yeah, but the attitude towards prisoners are so different because it's all about resocialization. It's not about punishment. And that's why recidivism is much less in Scandinavian countries and Europe in general than in America or Russia.
Because the it seems counterintuitive. Why would the attitude of warmth and caring more about the prisoners help people not to go to prison, right? It seems like it might be the other way around.
Not really, because they're, you know, the goal of prison is to help people to re-enter the society. Reasons why people end up in prisons, mostly they end up in prison because they were growing up in not in a really light environment. They were traumatized when they were kids. They were growing up in poor families. They were growing up in separated families. They didn't have a good education, so they didn't have a chance to get a good job. They were assaulted by somebody, and so they feel like the whole humanity is against them. So when they end up in prison, they have to reestablish somehow this belief that they can work together with humanity, that people are not turned against them. So if you punish them, if you hurt them, if you traumatize them more deeply when they are in prison, they will definitely commit more crimes when they will get out of prison, they will come back. That's why in America, this rating of recidivism.
Yeah. Don't worry. That word's hard for everybody, native English speaker or not.
Recidivism rating is quite high.
Nailed it.
You can compare America with Canada in terms of amount of crime rating. America has 7 times more prisoners per capita than Canada, but crime rating is pretty much the same. It means that putting more people in jail doesn't help you necessarily to get rid of crimes. So I believe in America, it's mostly about economy. It's mostly about prison industrial complex. It's about privatized prisons. And as far as I know, Barack Obama started to think about addressing prison question. And so when Donald Trump won presidential elections, I know that they got really excited about Trump because
right.
they knew that he will not shut private prisons down.
Right. So the private prison companies, their stock went up considerably when Donald Trump won the election. Yeah, I'm aware of that as well.
And the last prison I want to talk with you about is prison in Germany, in Berlin. It's important that it's ex-Stasi prison.
So former secret police from East Germany.
Exactly,
prison.
Yes. Many people were killed and tortured in that prison, and now it looks like a pretty nice place where people can move freely from their rooms to the kitchen where they have access to plates, knives, food, they can cook. And it's again about resocialization. When prisoners are in system like Russian or American, when they don't have access to normal things, when they get out of prison after 10 or 15 or 20 years, they have no idea how to live normal life. And the philosophy of prison in that ex-Stasi prison in Berlin is completely different. They are providing prisoners with jobs that can be used later by them in normal life. So they would give them various jobs that they can pick, so they can choose. It's not like you have to work, you have to sew police uniform like it was with me. Like,
yeah, you were sewing police uniforms with dull needles.
Why would I need it outside of prison? I was trying to let them know that I don't want to have anything with police uniforms when I'll get out of prison. Actually, it would be much better for me and for my improvement, because, you know, they put me in prison to improve me, like, as a human being. Just put me in the library. and I'll improve myself. In 2 years, I will be smarter, more educated person. Yeah. So in German prison, you can choose if you work, if you don't work, if you you can live in the library if you want to. And then I started to speak with the prisoners there in Russian. So that's why I was sure that prison wardens couldn't understand what we're talking about. So mm-hmm. the prisoners were really honest, and they told me that the biggest problem that they experienced so far is that they still don't have internet, though they were promised to have an internet like 2 months ago. And fuck yeah. those cops, it's a human right.
I'm telling you, if you gave me a choice between running water and internet, you'd see me outside catching rain. I'll tell you that.
And then I ask, like, what if you have an affair? That's totally fine. You can just write an application, and they will let you live and sleep in one room.
Unbelievable. Yeah. So you're on the prison campaign mission. That's one of your latest causes. I know you wrote that you find yourself in activist depression from time to time, and it almost seems like you get into a pattern of self-doubt. It's almost like imposter syndrome, which I've talked about on the show a lot, where people who are really doing something, they start to feel like, oh, well, am I really making a difference? Does this really mm-hmm. matter? That happens even to you?
Is it really? Does it happen not only to me? Really? You're saying that it's a popular problem.
Oh, yeah. Right? It's a popular problem. Yeah.
It happens to me a lot. Yeah. I just recently started to work with a therapist about this problem because before I didn't believe in psychological doctors. I was thinking that I can deal with everything by myself, but recently I understood that it's really hard.
Yeah, it's not wise to try to solve these problems on your own. We're not really equipped for it.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm getting better. Yeah, so I would advise people to go to therapist from time to time.
I think it's interesting that happens even with you. And one of the common themes on the show is we'll interview somebody who's maybe a Navy SEAL Special Forces or some politician or a CEO of a big company. And what high performers all have in common is we all have these times where we go, yeah, what I'm doing sucks. This is worthless. It's pointless. What a waste of time. Everybody thinks I'm full of shit.
Exactly. And the last time I was doing it, I was on a plane here to San Francisco. So it was like 8 hours ago. Yeah.
8 hours ago, you had a bunch of self-doubt creeping in.
Exactly. I was thinking that everything what I'm doing sucks. My music sucks. My action sucks. I shouldn't be talking in front of people because I cannot tell them anything interesting. Maybe it's true, but you know, it's not. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. You shouldn't feel these things. You should somehow deal with yourself to get rid of it, because it doesn't bring you anything, and you cannot really improve if you're full of these fears. So it's better to start acting and just improve step by step this situation by doing actually anything, doing stuff.
Yeah, by taking action.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you here. I think action ends that kind of suffering. And I've said this before, like whenever I feel like absolute crap, I just try to learn something new mm-hmm. or move forward in some way. Whether it's a breakup and you feel like you're worthless, so you want to learn a new language, that's definitely happened to me before. Or you just have self-doubt creep in and you decide, look, I'm going to figure out what I can do maybe to help somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that action just nips it right in the bud.
How many languages do you know?
Me? Five.
Oh,
yeah.
So you really suffered a lot from the self-doubt.
That's right. I've got endless amounts of self-doubt. Exactly. Or just a lot of breakups, right? You break up with somebody, you get some self-doubt, learn a language. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah, actually, it works like that. Yeah, when I stopped living with my ex-husband, I really learned English because he's bilingual, and so I didn't feel like I have to really use English language, though I knew it, but I was like, oh, I'm shy, I don't want to talk. You can talk. Yeah, I mean, you can translate, and yeah. But then I just realized that I'm on my own and I have to talk.
Yeah. And I don't believe that you're shy. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the videos I saw on YouTube, not really... maybe just shy with English, but certainly not shy in general.
No, I'm shy. That's the thing. So art help you. Like art, I still think that art is the best psychotherapy. I mean, it doesn't mean that you don't need therapist, but art is the best psychotherapy for me because I was the most modest, shyest nerd ever.
Well, you did, at age 14, have a crush on a revolutionary poet, which to me says nerd times a million.
Yes.
If you could meet with Vladimir Putin or talk with him, what would you say?
Nothing, because I think it's useless. Don't want to talk with him because I will not change his behavior.
So no point in it at all. He can hear from you through your art.
He will not hear from me. I don't want to do useless actions.
Yeah, just talking to a brick wall is what we say. That's
exactly, yes.
That's the English expression for this.
We have this expression too. I just didn't know that you have expression too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's like talking to a brick wall. Ask any married person about talking to a brick wall and they'll have an example for you. What advice do you have for people listening to this right now who maybe they don't live in a free society? And there's a lot of people listening to these in countries that are not free societies. What advice would you give them?
Wait a second, do you imply that America is a free society?
Yeah, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm implying the opposite. I don't know.
That's funny. And like you sound like this Freedom House organization right now.
Oh, yeah?
In Washington. Yeah, we were making so much fun of these organizations, like, you know, like Republican think tanks that are splitting all globe. I don't know what. How do they decide? So this country is free, this country is not free, this country is half free. I'm like, how do you know? Like, did you ever live in this country? As I was talking with somebody from Cuba, and the taxi driver, obviously we all like to talk with taxi drivers, and he said, like, in a way, obviously politically, situation sucks in Cuba, but let's say, like, I really like to drink while I'm walking down the street, he said to me. And it's completely impossible here in New York when we had this conversation, but he was like, yeah, you can freely do it in Cuba. So, like, all your liberal bullshit about one country, the only one criteria by what you can say if this country is free or not, it's not true exactly. But, yeah.
So hopefully that's the only question that sounds like Freedom House Radio. Speaking of self-doubt, you got me. You kicked me in the nuts on the last question. We got to end on something different.
No, I can still give an advice. Give advice just to people that who living in the world, because I don't like borders in general. So
go for it. Throw me a freaking bone here, Nadia. Come on.
Try to solve your problems through art first. And all people who asked me in America about, like, what can you advise us to if we want to go against Trump? I'm not a professional in American politics, but I think art can be really helpful to you. Because I haven't seen enough protest music, enough protest art since Trump was elected. Obviously, I've seen some good things. But I expected to see much more on 9th of November of 2016. I thought that, like, in the next few months, everybody would start recording political albums, like Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, Taylor Swift. No, it didn't happen. Including protest music, like underground music. I'm constantly looking for more and more political art and... Again, I'm not saying that there is no protest art, but I was thinking that it would be like a huge wave of different genres that became political, but it didn't happen. So just try. I want to see it so badly.
Do you think Americans are more passive than Russians when it comes to this, or just too passive in general?
They're not. No, I think it's a question of trend. Because think about punk. It is really cool to make political art. I think it's just not considered as a cool thing to make political art now. So we have to somehow break this trend. And I think it's just a matter of time.
I think a lot of folks might think that what you're doing as an activist seems like really crazy. You know, you're going up and you're getting arrested in a church, or you're protesting at the Olympics. Do you think it has to be like that? Because I think a lot of people would make political art, but they think, well, I can't just go and be Pussy Riot tomorrow. There's got to be something, maybe a beginner step for people to make.
We're writing music and we're making music videos, which is pretty comfortable and conventional thing to do. So you can do it too.
Simple as that.
Yes.
Nadia, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jason, did you know about Pussy Riot beforehand?
I did. I watched all the protests. I watched them go to jail. I was, you know, kind of wrapped with the news, and I was amazed that you actually got her on the show. Good job, man.
Yeah, man. She does not really like interviews. And it was funny because I had to kind of beg, borrow, steal for this one. You know, maybe no stealing, but it was a tough one. She had a talk right after. She had a gap in the talk. So I drove up to San Francisco and she had just gotten off a plane and was kind of like, hey, you know, she was super cool, super nice, actually relatively shy. And after the interview, I was like, hey, have you gotten a lot of interview requests? Or she's like, yeah, I don't like them. I like talking to you, but most interviewers aren't like you. And I took that as a huge compliment because I can imagine she's been interviewed by some pretty impressive folks. And yeah, people just, they don't do the homework. They ask the same stuff. And we were just kind of chilling. You'll be able to see it on YouTube soon as well. We were really just kind of hanging out in this studio. And she kept bumping the mic because I think she forgot it was there. And that was... Also, I took that as a compliment because it's not like she's not used to a microphone. She's a freaking musician. I thought it went really well, and I really enjoy these kinds of a little bit off the beaten path interviews. They're unique, you know, and that's rare.
It's nice that we can do these things now, and it's gratifying that you can get people that you want to have on the show every now and again, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm really, you know, I'm really proud of this interview. You did a great job, man.
Thank you. And a great big thank you to Nadia Tolokonikova. That book is called Read and Riot. And you're darn right I worked on pronouncing her name. I'm going to use it. That's why I've done it 4 or 5 times in the intro and the close here. It was not easy. Try it. Just try it right now. I'll wait.
Nadia Tolokonikova.
Oh, fine. Screw you. If you want to know how I managed to book great people like Nadia Tolokonikova and manage my relationships using systems and tiny habits, check out our level 1 course, which is free over at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. And look, I know you think you're going to do it later. You're not going to do it later. You're going to kick that can down the road and then you're going to go, oh no, I didn't dig the well before I got thirsty. I need these relationships now and now I'm too late. These drills are designed to take just a few minutes per day. I really wish I knew this stuff a decade and change ago. This is not fluff. This is crucial to move forward. You can find it all for free at advancedhumandynamics.com/level1. Speaking of building relationships, tell me your number one takeaway here from Nadia. I'm at Jordan Harbinger on both Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget, if you want to learn how to apply everything you heard and learned today from Nadia Tolokonikova, make sure you go grab the worksheets also in the show notes at jordanharbinger.com/podcast. This show is produced in association with Podcast One, and this episode was co-produced by Jason the Linguist DeFilippo and Jen Harbinger. Show notes by Robert Fogarty, worksheets by Caleb Bacon, and I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger. The fee for this show is you share it with friends when you find something useful, which is hopefully in every single episode. So please share the show with those you love and even those you don't. We get a lot more in the pipeline, ready and excited to bring it to you. In the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.